Hello and welcome to the Violin Geek Podcast. I'm your host, Laurel Thompson. And if you're new to the show, welcome. I'm happy to have you here. And if you've been a listener for a while, welcome back. Today I'll be sharing tips for how to play more musically. This is a question that I often get from students who are in that beginning slash intermediate range in their process of learning to play their instrument. And they're starting to get the hang of tone and intonation and rhythm, and they're wondering how to really make the music move beyond the page. I think most of us have had experiences watching performers who are able to really embody the essence of a mood or an emotion or a feeling. And for many of us, that's what drew us to want to play the violin or the viola or the cello. But these people who are able to express almost the inexpressible. And it's just such a pure, direct connection to a feeling. We don't need language to tell us that something is this way and describing it. We can just, through music, almost transmit to our audience that exact feeling, that essence of that feeling. And that is a really magical experience, whether you're the performer or the audience member. And I know that a lot of these students can cite situations, maybe their very first experience with the violin, where they felt as if it was inexplicable, but they were brought to tears, or they felt this wave of joy or this rush of emotion that, again, is maybe completely beyond words. And that sparked something in them. How can I do this too? However, as we know, when we first start playing our instrument, a lot of the day-to-day is centered very physically around how to kind of make the instrument work for us. So how can we just get a decent tone on this thing? And how can we put our fingers in roughly the right spots so it sounds decently in tune? And how can we play the right notes at the right time? And all of this stuff. And we can go on for weeks and months and even years, even decades, just focusing really on the tuning and the timing. And if we're lucky, the tone. To try and make things come together. And we might wonder, well, but wait a minute, how is that person who sparked that interest in me to learn how to play this instrument, how are they able to kind of move beyond all that technique and really make the music come to life? So that's what I hope to talk about today. And it's, of course, a lifelong journey to express ourselves musically. But I'm hoping that we'll be able to walk away with some good tips that even a beginner can use to start to cultivate this. Before I get to that, I want to thank everyone for their ratings and reviews wherever you listen. Most places you can give up to a 5-star rating, and some places you can write a review as well. And this helps people to find the show. It just helps the ranking of the show. And when people do come across it, they see a nice 5-star rating and they think, oh, maybe that's something I should check out. So if you have a moment, I would really appreciate that. Your support keeps the show going. And I'd also like to mention that the intro and outro music you're hearing today is a song called Sweet Beauty. This is actually the very first co-write that I did with my partner, Dan Frechette. We wrote it back in 2013, and it is a song, kind of a tragic Celtic ballad, actually. It has lyrics, but I'll just be featuring the instrumental parts today, which I felt were a good fit for this particular episode, being as it was just St. Patrick's Day, and also because when I do play this part in performance, I really feel a lot of emotion with the violin and just the whole storyline, again, being a tragic Celtic ballad, it's kind of fun to just wail away on some of these notes and little ornaments and stuff like that that I threw into the mix. So I hope you enjoy that, and I will have a link to the full track in the show notes if you're interested in checking that out. And now, without further ado, let's dive into the episode. If we look up the adjective musical, the Oxford Dictionary tells us that it is relating to music and also having a pleasant sound, melodious or tuneful. Similarly, if we look up the adverb musically, we get in a way that relates to music or a way that sounds like music, as well as with a pleasant sound, melodiously. And then if we look up some antonyms for musical or musically, so the opposite, we get words like inactivity, underact, tightness, immovability, unemotional, displeasing, tuneless, unpleasant, dry, salty, sugarless, tasteless, sour, malodorous, hateful, soured. And so all of that paints quite a picture of a sound that doesn't have a lot of variety and is pretty unpleasant to listen to, which I think many of us are thinking, yeah, sometimes that can sound like the early stages of learning to play the violin for sure. But the good news is that there is a wide spectrum of qualities between completely unmusical and incredibly musical. And all of us are traversing that spectrum all the time. I mean, certainly when we're first learning a piece, it might not sound that musical. And especially when we're a beginner and we're first learning our first song, it might not be that musical. And then later on, when we're more advanced and we're learning a new piece, it might be a little bit musical, but it certainly will be more musical later. So it's always something that we are striving for and learning about and deepening that ability to really express ourselves. So what if we were to describe someone as having a very musical sounding voice? As we've already determined, it would not be a monotone voice. It might be a voice that has a lot of changes in pitch, especially as someone's describing something that they're really excited about. And the pitch changes might emphasize certain words, and they might draw out certain words for emphasis, or if they're really excited, they might actually speed up the rhythm of their speech. And we might have to lean in a little bit to even hear every single word that they're saying. And on the flip side, if they're talking about something that is really relaxing and sort of awe-inspiring, like a beautiful hillside covered in snow and the light from the tiny window of a tiny cabin way off in the distance is casting this beautiful glow of light upon the snow and streaming down to the lone hiker who's making their way towards this beautiful little cabin that they're just waiting to enjoy a warm cup of hot cocoa in. And the voice might get a little bit softer as everything calms down. And the voice might get a little bit more animated again as the day breaks. It's dawn and the snow hares are jumping out in the beautiful meadow and the sparkling lights from the sun, just almost blinding. This snow is just reflecting these colors back at us, and it's just such a glorious day. So there are a lot of dynamics. We have phrasing, we have articulation, we have, of course, tone, and just a lot of variety sort of all mixed up. And thankfully for our music, the composers have handed us a lot. They've given us the notes. They've given us, in many cases, the articulation written right there on the page and the dynamics written right there on the page. And phrasing is sometimes indicated. Most of the time we have to figure that out for ourselves, however, and then as far as our performance of the music, we need to work out how our tone and our vibrato and things like this are going to function and elevate the music. But before any of us at any level can make the music more musical, we really need to make our idea of the music more vivid. What is this music trying to say? And a good place to start is it in major or minor? Our major sounding keys are going to naturally sound a little bit more joyous or stately or calm, not in a moody way. While our minor keys might sound a little bit more sad or mysterious, suspenseful, there's plenty more words we could use to describe both major and minor. And so for a beginner, we might not understand that and what that means. But if we hear, you know, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, there's our major scale. If we hear do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, te, do, there's our minor scale. It has just built into it some of these moody notes that give us a bit of pause, like if we're watching a movie and everything seems like it's going along okay, but something seems a little bit suspicious. Something is about to happen. And we don't have to do a whole lot to bring out the basic feeling that a major key piece versus a minor key piece would present to us. We certainly have to play in tune, or some of the notes might get a little bit iffy. I know if, like, we're playing in the key of A and we're not so used to high third fingers and we end up playing some C naturals and some G naturals instead of C sharps and G sharps down on the G and D strings, then we might start to sound like we're in minor versus major. So we do have to be careful. And a lot of minor pieces have accidentals because we have some different types of minor scales, actually, and some of them emphasize like a leading tone. So the seventh note of the scale is more like a major piece. It's just a half step lower than the tonic. So like if we're in the key of G, we might have some F sharps that wouldn't normally be in the key of G minor. Normally we'd have two flats, but in a G minor piece, we might sure have that key signature that says two flats, but then get a whole bunch of F sharps scattered across our page. And if we don't make those real sharps, then we won't get the full effect of what those notes are trying to do for us. So certainly playing in tune is definitely important for being musical. We don't want to sound monotone. We want to have the different pitches. But yeah, just as far as major versus minor, we're getting a lot just kind of handed to us from the composer. So then where do we go from there? How do we turn that into something that is really going to affect our audience in that deep way that we might have been affected by a performer? Well, I think we really need to cultivate a body feeling of these emotions. So like we are that storyteller with that musical voice, how would we embody the story that the music is trying to share? Can we put ourselves in that place of feeling sad or feeling joyous or feeling mysterious? And then once we have that picture, we can start to figure out how our technique can be the means towards our musical goal. And if we wait for our technique to be ready, then maybe we'll never get there. So we really have to explore and experiment with our technique and relate the sounds we're able to express off of that sort of internal idea of what we want to express. Are we getting closer? Are we getting closer? Maybe we're recording ourselves and listening back. Is that getting closer to that feeling? And as odd as it sounds, this is where I feel like there really is a benefit to technical practice away from the music. And if we are practicing, let's say, articulations, can we make our articulations not just a technical exercise, like we're playing martelet and we're trying to get that nice crack at the beginning of our notes, and we're just kind of being really technical about it, but can we really emphasize, again, that means towards the end, that martelet is going to be a really intense moment in a piece where we want to express something forceful, aggressive, maybe even angry. When we're practicing open strings with martelet or a scale with martelet, can we bring that feeling out in our body and in the sound that we're hearing? And if we're practicing dynamics, sure, let's put it in a piece, but maybe let's also practice dynamics just separately with some open strings. And can we play several open Ds in a row, getting progressively louder? And can we play several more Ds in a row, gradually taking us down to a really sweet diminuendo, which we could relate back to a moment in a piece, maybe the ending of a piece, where we just want to leave in a whisper. These are just two examples. There are so many things that we could do away from the music to support our musicality. And it's just because when we are in the music, there are just so many things going on, and we're mostly concerned about the notes and the rhythms. And it's hard to move beyond that into other factors like phrasing and articulation and dynamics and tone and vibrato, all these things that really make the music come to life. So let's go hands-on and explore some of these elements together. I'm choosing an easy song, a beginning song called May Song, which is in Suzuki Book 1. It's a folk song, and if you're just starting out and you haven't played it yet, you haven't gotten there, you will surely play it soon. And you can meanwhile use some of these ideas just on open strings, even some of them probably with pizzicato if that's where you are right now. And we're going to start with tone, because as we heard in the definition of musical and musically, we have a beautiful tone, and that's where it's tough as a beginner. And it's tough as we're more advanced too. It's always tough to create a good tone because we really have to think not about the violin so much, but the bow. And a lot of us have spent so much time on the left side that we forget about the right side. And so we could do a whole tone episode, maybe multiple episodes, probably videos. I have some on my YouTube channel about improving tone, and I work with that a lot with my students. But just some basics of tone. We don't want to have too much weight coming through the bow. We don't want to have too little weight coming through the bow. We don't want the bow moving too fast for the amount of weight, and we don't want it too slow for the amount of weight. So those factors, weight, and I use that rather than pressure, because we can get a lot of weight, pretty much all the weight that we need for most situations, through just our arm resting into the bow, which is then resting on the strings. And the violin is just so perfectly set up that the lower strings, which are thicker and require a little bit more weight, they are down low, or we have to raise our arm up a little higher to get there, and that therefore helps us transfer more weight through gravity and less weight on the E string side, or A string if you're on viola or cello, less weight over there because our arm is a little bit closer to our body, and a lot of the weight is therefore quote unquote lost into just kind of gravity hanging our arm by our side. So the weight factor is quite well set up for us, and then we really just have to think about speed from there. So can we draw a nice sound, almost just letting the bow rest on the strings, and then we're guiding the bow. I've been telling students recently, don't think about yourself as someone who has to hold the bow on the strings. Think about yourself as someone who has to just move the bow on the strings. And that's made a huge difference for their tone. And of course, how we move the bow on the strings, it has to be straight, can't be slipping all around. We can change our sounding points. So in other words, the spot where the bow rests on the strings. And I just did a YouTube video recently about the sounding points. You can go check that out on my YouTube channel. But really, as long as we set the bow on the string straight and we draw a stroke, we can pretty easily modify depending on if we hear kind of a more grumbly sound or a more airy sound, how fast and how much weight we need to make a good tone. That said, of course, it's easier said than done because it does take practice and it takes sensitivity with our bowing arm and a setup in our bowing hand, which is flexible yet secure. So that could be several months even of just mostly working on tone until we can get a baseline tone that we're happy with. And that's completely normal. I wish more of us would spend more time at the beginning doing that, because it is a little bit harder to come back and work on tone later once we've gotten all of these habits in place. So first, we might just want to play May Song with good tone, in tune, with good timing. And so there's the first line of May Song, focusing on just playing the right notes at the right time with decent tone. And that's where a lot of us are. And that's fine. It still is a nice song, but I'm not including the elements that I might include otherwise, which would be some awareness of the phrasing, a little bit of dynamic shaping, maybe some variety of articulation, definitely some vibrato. And these are all elements that I feel like don't make a whole lot of sense to worry about until we have those basics covered. But assuming we do, let's take this a little bit further. I feel like phrasing is the next element that you could add to this. It's subtle, but it does make a difference. And what's nice about it is it's something that you don't really have to learn a new technique to employ. You just have to be aware of where the phrases start and where they end. And with that, sometimes a little bit of dynamic variety can help, but you can also just literally give a tiny, tiny pause. Just like language, we create sort of the feeling of a comma or a period. And so with May Song, we have this first line, it's four bars. And after two bars, we feel like there's just the slightest pause. There's what we call a cadence. And then after two more bars, there's another cadence. There's another kind of complete thought that ends there. And if we're not quite sure where the phrases begin and end, it's nice to sometimes sing our music and figure out where we naturally feel like taking a breath. And of course, we need to have decent breath control to make that make any sense. But if I were to sing May Song and go bum, ba, bum, bum, and then take a breath there, well, does that feel really complete? I mean, maybe I needed to breathe there because I was out of breath, but maybe that didn't feel so complete. So if I sing it again, bum, 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 that's maybe where I take the breath. And that feels a little bit more complete. Does it feel like I could take a bow and walk off stage? Yeah, the audience would probably feel kind of disappointed in that, but at least it feels somewhat complete. And then if I finish that phrase, bum, ba, bum, 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 yeah, that feels more like an ending. I don't really even need to play the rest of this song, actually, because it is a complete cadence. I mean, I should play the rest of the song just because it's rather short, but if we just put tiny, tiny little pauses there, that can make it a little bit more musical already. I'll demonstrate. As you can hear, phrasing is pretty subtle, but with the other elements that we'll be discussing here in a moment, it really helps frame the piece. And like I said, kind of have our listener hear the music a little bit more like language, where we have complete thoughts that we listen to and feel like notes running at us and they're just all kind of randomly jumbled up. Also related to language, we can talk about articulation, which I basically liken to the difference between a nice round vowel sound and a harder consonant sound like a K or a T, and how our language and all languages have some variety of softer, more round sounds and harder, more sharp sounds. And so similarly with our bow, we can create attacks that make the notes sort of punch out and other sounds that are a little bit more subtle and gradual and kind of drawing the sound out in just a more kind of smooth way. And so for a song like May Song, I probably would interpret this obviously as a major sounding piece and also a piece that sounds pretty joyous and happy. And so to really bring it to life, I might think about some of those more poppy kind of sounds. So like the martelet sound or a staccato sound, pep it up a little bit, and we could always practice on our open strings just to hear that variety of some of those different articulations. So here I'm just going to go and do a little string of open Ds. I'm going to start with just some normal détaché, and then I'm going to do some staccato, and then I'm going to move into some martelé, and you'll hear how the sound of the notes gets gradually a little bit more sort of upbeat and forceful, even though I'm just playing open Ds. Check it out. And I tried to keep the dynamics out of the picture. Of course, that's difficult with martelé. It does feel like a type of bow stroke that wants to be louder, but it's possible, of course, to have articulation completely separate from dynamics. It should be completely separate from dynamics. We should be able to do a martelé that's nice and soft and still has that more consonant sound. But just to give an example now from Maisong, I might play it not completely staccato or not completely martelé, but I might emphasize those types of sounds on certain notes just to, again, make it more musical, have more variety as I play through. And then I'll reflect, am I getting further or closer to my goal with Maisong, which we assume is about springtime? Maybe this is a maple dance. Maybe this is the first flowers blooming on the trees. It's joyous. It's happy. We want to feel upbeat and enlivened. So yeah, are these articulations helping that or hurting that? And then I'll make my decision on how I'm going to play the song and interpret the song. And so we heard a range. Do we hear the full-on, fullest martelé? Did we hear the full-on, fullest staccato? Maybe not. Maybe everything was sort of détaché, but sort of staccato at the same time. I could go through 10, 15, 20 different iterations, probably just of those notes, and come up with completely different versions each time. Similar, but different. And we remember that variety was part of being musical. So already we've made this so much more musical, and I still haven't utilized what I feel like are some of the most musical elements, being dynamics, and then, of course, vibrato really does help. So first, looking at dynamics, I can think about where the sort of peaks of the phrases are. So we've already carved out the first two bars being one phrase or a half cadence anyway, and then the next two bars completing that full thought with a full cadence. And then within the melody there, we see physically on the page some higher notes. We see in the first phrase, mini phrase, we see some high A's, third finger up on the E string. And then in the second half of that first line, kind of the second mini phrase, we see that we're kind of gradually working our way back down towards the open A. So I could bring that out a little bit and just sort of shape this overall forte dynamic into something that is a little bit more interesting. And then I also chose this piece because in the second line, we actually have some dynamics written in. We have a mezzo forte to start the first two bars of line two, kind of the B section. And then we have an echo. We have the exact same part repeated in two more bars, but now it's a piano dynamic, so it's a lot softer. So I'm just going to play through from the beginning through that second line, and we'll hear all that dynamic variety that we could include to make this a little bit more musical. Boy, that really leaves us hanging. We go, where did it go? There is one more line. It's the A section again. And I promise I will play the whole song eventually. And you'll be able to hear it in its complete version with all the musical elements added in. I was doing a little bit of the articulation and the phrasing, of course, as I'm also exploring a bit of the dynamics. But to get softer and louder, we kind of go back to tone. Honestly, we're thinking about those really harsh tones that come from too much pressure and maybe not enough bow speed. And if we just back off from that a little bit, we can actually get a nice loud dynamic. We're giving the instrument a lot. We just need to not give it so much that it's going to crunch, basically. And there's our forte. And then if we're thinking about some of those really airy sounds, almost like when the bow is slipping, when it's not maybe bowed straight, if we just straighten out the bow, but have that really light weight on the string, and then we're just maybe not bowing very much, we're bowing kind of slow and soft, then we're gonna get that softer dynamic. So you can practice that with simply, again, some open strings. I'm gonna just go ahead and, like I mentioned earlier, take this open D from a soft dynamic to a loud dynamic and back again. And I promise you, although I have all this volume automation and stuff in the software I'm using to record this, that is purely me in the room playing that crescendo and diminuendo. And I'm simply doing it starting off with a very light bow on the string. I'm not even using full flat hair. I'm on the outside edge of the hair. And I'm gradually getting flatter as I also bow a little faster. I really focus on speed more than weight or pressure when I'm thinking about dynamics. And then when I'm getting a faster speed, of course, I do need to find a weight that is going to give me the effect I want. But if I just go for weight first, a lot of times when people think dynamics, they think, oh, I just press harder or I press less. And that is a very risky thing to do because very quickly, if we're trying to give the instrument more with pressure, we're going to get a crunch. And if we're trying to just get a lighter sound with kind of a light bow, then it won't really have the core tone that we still need. It'll just kind of sound very airy and not really as much of the pitch as maybe just kind of a harmonic sound or something like that. So that is something that you can practice. Obviously, you can practice in a piece, but just practicing it, like I said earlier, away from your pieces is so helpful. I highly recommend recording, especially when you're doing dynamic practice, because the instrument is so close to us, especially violin and viola. It's right under our ear. And so the dynamics that we're hearing might sound very dramatic. I will guarantee you that what I just heard when I did just that fairly dramatic crescendo and diminuendo, it sounded so much more intense to me. And then when I listen back, I go, yeah, that's there. But we really have to overemphasize the dynamics to really make them come across. And so just some recording, even if you just have voice memos, something like that, will at least give you an idea for how much your dynamics are really coming across. And for a lot of us, once we have the tone and the tuning and the timing and a bit of phrasing and some articulation and some dynamics, that's pretty good for creating a fairly musical piece. And we might go all the way through our first year or two just focusing on those elements. But then eventually we do want to learn vibrato. It's just one of those techniques that everyone wants to learn. I've had beginners come and it's so funny where they don't really know anything about playing their instrument yet, but they have a feeling that vibrato is something they definitely want to learn. So it's always hard to say like, well, we're not going to learn vibrato today on day one, your very first lesson, but we will definitely put it on the back burner and do everything we can to work towards it. And you will get there. So if you haven't checked out my complete vibrato mastery course, I will put it in the show notes. I put it out in 2015 and I have thousands of students on there now. It's a video course which goes through the process that I learned to teach vibrato as well as my own techniques that I've developed over the years to teach vibrato. And it's something that honestly was hard not to play in all of these samples I've given you so far, but when we're trying to learn it, it can be one of the most difficult techniques to learn because we need to be very methodical with it and also very relaxed. And a lot of times when we're trying to put in effort, we end up tensing up, and that is an anti-vibrato thing to do. We can't be tense about it. So I find that a lot of times the students who actually magically develop a vibrato fairly quickly and easily are the ones that maybe don't actually know that much about vibrato. Like I have a student now, she's studied mostly fiddle music with some fiddle teachers, and now she's wanting to learn more classical music. And it's really interesting to just see how naturally the vibrato has come through because she just doesn't have all these preconceived ideas about it. Honestly, I think that's one of the main strengths that she's bringing to the table as far as learning vibrato. She just kind of is exploring what it sounds like, and she's enjoying adding it to some of her old fiddle waltzes and the classical music that I'm teaching her. And yeah, it's pretty cool. So we just have to kind of go with the flow with vibrato. But once you do learn it, then you can add it to a song like May Song, and it can really work nicely along with both the articulation and the dynamics, as well as phrasing. I mean, it really kind of ties everything together. And so as far as phrasing goes, I might kind of tone it down a little bit, the vibrato itself, when I'm getting to the end of a phrase. And with the articulations, I might make the vibrato a little bit more fast and narrow when I'm using it along with maybe more of a martelle stroke, something that with the bow is already kind of popping, and then the vibrato just kind of punches it in, just that little extra amount. And then with dynamics, I might make the vibrato a little bit more dynamic itself, so a little bit bigger and maybe a little bit faster, but sometimes you'd be surprised, sometimes wider is actually more dynamic. Just when I'm kind of bringing the dynamics up, like a louder dynamic, and then I might kind of mellow the vibrato out when I'm trying to bring it down a little bit. And so I can work with it and really create a lot of interesting color with the vibrato and all of these other elements. So we'll give that a try now. And so now, piled on top of these other qualities we've been talking about, we hear what the vibrato is adding and what it's not really adding. I mean, it is part of the picture, but it's not the whole picture. I was playing with the phrasing, with the articulation, with the dynamics, and with the vibrato. And a lot of us, I think, mistakenly assume it's just the vibrato when we hear someone playing and it feels really expressive because it's kind of in your face a little bit. I personally try to play with a vibrato that is going to blend with everything else. And like I was saying earlier, it's sort of a supportive technique that's sort of tying everything together. And we are playing with some open strings in this piece, so unfortunately we don't have vibrato on those notes expressly, but we can kind of hear how it's adding a color. And similar to a vocal vibrato, it's allowing notes that are especially a little bit longer to have a little bit more interest and resonance. But no one should think that they can't play musically just because they can't play vibrato yet. As we've seen, there are so many other factors that we can spend many, many months, if not years, exploring. A lifetime, really. We'll never get to the end of this, which I think is wonderful about playing a musical instrument. But the final element that I want to discuss here in this podcast is tempo, which I feel is related to the musicality of a piece. Because if we were to play May Song, for instance, with a really slow tempo, maybe that's where we're starting because we're just learning the piece, but it's not going to have the same effect on our audience as if we played it up to tempo. And if we played it super, super fast, it's also not going to have the same effect. And there's a range that would totally work, and it depends on what our desired effect is. But let me just demonstrate, again, that first line a couple different ways, and we'll just reflect on how May Song can convey a slightly different feeling depending on how fast I play it. So it's not that one is better than another, it's just, what do we want to express? Again, can we make our idea of the music more vivid? If we want to sound kind of calm and stately, we might choose a tempo like the first one. And if we want to sound super joyous, then maybe we choose the second one. And if we want to sound fairly happy, but maybe we're not ready to play quite so fast, or maybe it just feels too fast, and maybe this is a situation where we even have people that want to dance. Like I said, maybe this is for a maypole dance or something like that. Maybe we choose the third one. And of course, there's so much variety that is in between all of those tempos. But we hear how the exact same notes, similar-ish articulations, the same phrasing, similar dynamics, and similar vibrato, all of that can still have a slightly different feeling depending on our tempo. And so to create more musical sounding pieces, we can work with all of these elements, almost as if these elements are a recipe and we're the chef that is combining ingredients, mixing and matching our approach. And we don't need necessarily all the ingredients all the time. There are definitely times, for instance, where I choose not to use vibrato, or where I choose to come into a note gradually with vibrato. And the point that we're striving for is where we can control our techniques, where we can make that choice to add this or subtract that, or to include this or to not include that. And most importantly, to not do it just in a technical way. Oh, I should move my bow a little faster here because I need to crescendo. But to really feel that crescendo and relate it back to that storyline that you want to create in the music, and how you want that phrase to arc. And in May Song, how we want that excited, joyous springtime feeling to really emanate from our instrument, from us, out into the room we're playing in and our audience. So making sure that even in trying to be more musical, we're not just trying to be more technically musical, but we're really trying to be musicians and artists. And that really, again, comes back to, can we feel the music that we're trying to express? Can we imagine it? Can we make it more vivid? And that starts in our mind's eye, maybe our musical ear, and then we carry it out into real life. So good luck with this. Happy practicing, as I always say. I hope this has been helpful for you, no matter what level you're at with your playing. We can obviously tackle these issues in simple songs like this, all the way up to the most virtuoso material. It's kind of the same, mostly handful of techniques that we're mixing and matching, like I've been saying, to create a more musical version of our pieces. So again, I'm Laurel Thompson, and I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's given people of every ability level something to chew on. My website is laurelthompson.com. That's LaurelThompson, laurelthompson.com. I will have that in the show notes for you to check out if you're interested in learning more about me, my recordings, my teaching. You can check out my YouTube channel, and also my video page has a bunch of both music videos from music that I've done as well as teaching videos. So like I said earlier, you'll have some videos about different techniques. Tone has been a recent one. How to get a more comfortable shoulder rest has been a recent one. And you can also check out my website for the companion to the podcast, which is the Violin Geek blog. If you go to the website there and click on the Violin Geek tab, you will see a link to the Violin Geek blog, which has been going for, gosh, we'll be coming up on 20 years here in a few years. That's crazy. You have some catching up to do if you haven't checked it out yet. I have articles going way back, talking about different topics, a lot of technique topics, practice topics, different things that I felt was better expressed in print versus audio here on the podcast. And I hope you enjoy that. And if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, topic ideas, interview ideas for either the blog or the podcast, those are always helpful, and you can send your ideas to me. My email is best, laurel@laurelthompson.com. Again, that's LaurelThompson. And I will have all of these links in the show notes so you don't have to pull over if you're driving and write things down. But I hope you're having a wonderful month out there, and until next time, happy practicing.